Okay, let's begin. So the middle of Parshas Tzav. As we began discussing already last week, the Parsha begins addressing the korbanos, the various offerings and sacrifices that are brought to the Beis HaMikdash. And I'd like to focus today on one specific one, which is related and relevant in many, many different ways, and that is what's known as the korban todah. The korban todah is the Thanksgiving offering. So out of the various offerings that are brought to the Beis HaMikdash, so sometimes, as we spoke a little bit about last week, sometimes a person brings a korban ola, which is an elevation offering, which means what they bring is completely consumed on the altar, completely consumed on the Mizbeach. It's a statement that a Jew says, everything that I am really is yours, Hashem. Here is this animal, and it's completely consumed. We learned a little bit last week about what's known as the korban chatas, which is a sin offering. That means that if a Jew inadvertently, by accident, violated one of the more severe prohibitions in the Torah, so they need an atonement, and they would come to the Beis HaMikdash, and that would be to atone for their wrongdoings. The priest would eat a little bit, but the Jew himself would not eat anything from that offering. Those were two of those which we learned about this week. And now the Torah is going to introduce us to a subset of a larger group. The larger group is what's known as the Korban Shlamim. Korban Shlamim, which literally would translate into a peace offering. The sages famously say the reason why it's called a peace offering is because it makes peace between everybody, in the sense that everybody gets a piece of it. P-I-E-C-E, everybody gets a piece of it, meaning the Mizbeach, a little bit is burnt, some of it goes to Hashem, some of it goes to the Kohanim, to the priest, and some of it goes to the Jew who brought it. He also gets a fresh steak. So since everybody gets a piece, so it's called a peace offering, P-E-A-C-E, a peace offering, because it brings shalom, it brings peace to everybody. Everybody gets a piece of it. A subset within that group of what's known as a korban shlamim, there are different times that a person can bring a korban shlamim. A subset of that is what's known as the korban todah. The korban todah is a thanksgiving offering. Let us learn, we're going to learn actually like we like to do every week. Those of you who are regulars at our class, and those who are just tuning in now that we have Zoom, so we learn the actual psukim inside to study a little bit together, and then to see what we can, using that as a springboard from where we can go from there. So the Torah describes as follows. Again, I'm in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph, 7th chapter, verse 11 in Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Tzav. The Torah says as follows: the Zois Teiras Zevach Hashlamim. This is the law of the peace offerings. If a person wants to bring a peace offering to Hashem, im al todah yakrivena. What if a person is bringing it for a thanksgiving? It's specific, and it's out of the big category called the korban shlamim, and he's bringing the specific type called a korban todah. So what does he do? V'hikriv al zevach hatodah chalot matzot b'lulot b'shem. So what does he do? He brings together with his korban todah, with his thanksgiving offering, unleavened bread, unleavened matzot, bululot bashemen. They are smeared with oil, or rikike matzot mishuchim bashemen, and he brings loaves with fine flour mixed with oil, solos murbechas chalos bululos bashemen. Three different types of matzot. If you pay attention, you read through this pasuk, we have the unleavened loaves with oil, unleavened wafers smeared with oil, and loaves of scalded fine flour mixed with oil, as the Torah describes. For our purposes, three different things, three different types of loaves, 10 loaves of each, for a total of 30 loaves of bread. And then the Torah describes in the next pasuk, pasuk Gimel, a fourth type of loaf of bread. Al chalot lechem chametz yakriv karbano al zevach todas shlamim shlamav. He brings leavened bread, chametz. He brings together, and all of this is combined into his offering. So he brings his animal as a korban todah, a thanksgiving offering, and then together with his thanksgiving offering, he brings a total of 40 loaves of bread, 30 of which are matzah. The matzah is made in different ways. Some of it is with a lot of oil, with a little bit of oil, depending on how it's done, but there are 30 of the breads are matzah. Remember, in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, the matzah was not our flat, hard matzah. It was more of what they know today as the, what do they call it? Not from Morocco, Temani type of matzah, which is a more of a loaf of a bread, just that it wasn't leavened, but it's a little bit softer, just hasn't fully risen. So 30 loaves like that, plus 10 loaves that are actually chametz. Those who were on the call last week will say, hey, wait a minute, didn't we learn last week you're not allowed to bring chametz into the Beis HaMikdash? There was no chametz on the Mizbeach. So the answer is, it's true. This was not brought to the Mizbech. It was not put on the altar. It was not burnt. It was just brought together with his animal offering, but given directly to the Kohanim. It was not put on the Mizbech, because as we learned last week, you're not allowed to put the offering of flour on the Mizbech if it does become chametz. Chametz is out in the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, he has these 40 loaves. Now, let's just take a pause for a moment. Those are the psukim. Let's just step back for a minute and say, what's going on over here? When does a person bring a korban todah? So, Rashi points out, based on the Gemara says, why do you bring a korban todah? Why do you bring a Thanksgiving offering? So, Rashi comments, al davar hoda'a, a person wants to give thanks, al nes shina aselo, on a miracle that happens. If a person experiences a miracle, how do you express your thanks? What do you do? So we, as we've learned this, we've said this many, many times in various situations, we don't just give thanks. We don't just give thanks with words by simply saying thank you. Human beings, we need to do things. We function better when our words come along with an action. Now that I do something, it makes think about the Pesach Seder that we're all getting ready for. We don't just tell the story alone. What makes the whole night is, I gotta eat the matzah, I have to drink 4 cups of wine, I have to lean, I have to eat the mar. So you say, what is eating the mar that's gonna make? Yes, it does. Everything makes a difference. The fact that you have to lean, the fact that you have to eat matzah, you have to eat mar. All the actions we do as human beings make a difference. So if a person says to, let's say you have a colleague at work, or you have a spouse, or a parent, or a child, and let's say you did something wrong and you want to make up for it, so you could just pick up the phone and say, I'm sorry. But if it also comes along with chocolate, or with a bouquet of flowers, or you take them out to lunch, or you say, let's go out and spend the afternoon, those, it makes a difference that it wasn't just a word, it was with action. So the same is true if you want to do something and you want to thank somebody. Somebody did something and you really, really appreciate it and you want to show your thanks. So we all know that you could do that in a couple of different ways. You could just send a text, thank you very much, I really appreciate it. Or you could do something. If it's just words, it has value. Of course it has value. But when it's connected to the action, so then the words have that much more meaning. So says Rashi, person had a miracle. A miracle happened, their life was saved. So they want to say thank you. So you could just say thank you to Hashem, and we should. But there's more. So they also want to bring an offering to the Beis HaMikdash to do so. Now, just for a moment, just think again. Most of the Jews did not live in Yerushalayim. And even if you did, but you didn't necessarily live in the Old City, a very, very small percentage. So imagine you lived wherever you lived, in Petach Tikva, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, Me'er Sha'arim, or you lived in Bnei Brak. And a miracle happened and you wanted to say thank you to Hashem. So you could, in your local shul, make a kiddush Shabbos afternoon and say thank you. That's what we do, right? No, not if you lived in times based on Mikdash. You know what it took to get from Bnei Brak to Yerushalayim? You had to, there's a trip. You had to plan it out. And now you have to schlep an animal, or you're going to buy one there. So you're either getting prepared. This is a thing. This is an event. We're going to Yerushalayim to say thank you that my life was saved. What are the four things that a person's life would be saved? So the Rashi quotes, Yordei Hayam, those who traveled overseas. Of course, in those days, traveling across an ocean was fraught with danger. It was not until recent times, very recent times, that it's considered less dangerous. And no pun intended, but getting on any cruise vessel in today's day and age, I think, would have the exact same level of danger affiliated with it. But crossing the sea was considered a miraculous event that you survived. Holchei Midbaros, crossing a desert, was similar. Chavushe Beis HaAsurim, one who was released from prison. V'choyle Shenisrapa, or a person who was sick. A person who was ill, deathly ill, was involved in a sickness which could have potentially, heaven forbid, taken their life. And they survived. Rashi quotes the exact language of the Gemara. I want to read it exactly because it is particular and exact. Shehim Srichin Lohodot, that they have to give thanks. So Rashi says, Shekosu behen, because the Pasuk says regarding all four, and the Gemara goes through all four, these Yodu la Hashem chazdo, one should give thanks to Hashem for his chesed, v'nifla osav, livnei adam, and he should make sure that he tells people his wondrous acts. You need to let it be known. Give thanks. And so all four of these, any one of those four situations, crossing the sea, crossing the ocean, being released from prison. In those days, again, prison was not like prison today. If you survived prison, that was in itself I meant you were thrown in by the non-Jewish authorities and you were lucky to get out alive, or you were ill and healed. In today's modern day and age, what we do instead is we make what's called a Birchas Hagomel. This is when we say a bracha of Hagomel, that I was able to survive, and that is done specifically in these four circumstances as well. And then there's an expanded version of other events in which a person's life was saved. They were in a life-threatening situation, and they were able to come out alive. They would make the Birchas Hagomel. And all that bracha that we make is in place of what really should be done, which is what we're learning about, which is the bringing of the Karban Todah. And again, in each one of these four circumstances, or the expanded version of anything else, exactly like we just mentioned a moment ago, you make a trip out of it. You go to Yerushalayim. Why are you going to Yerushalayim? I'm going to give thanks to Hashem. Where are you going for a day? I need to take a day off of work, you say to your boss. What? I need to go to Yerushalayim to give a karban and give thanks to Hashem. Now, when you come with your animal, as we've just mentioned before, so there are a lot of loaves of bread that come together with it. 40 loaves of bread that are brought together. As the Torah says in the very next pasuk, the Kohen takes one of the hikriv mimenu echad mikol karban shuma lahashem, pasuk yidal, and one of each loaf of bread goes to the actual Kohen himself, and then the rest belong to the person who brought his karban. Pasuk tes vav, one more pasuk. Ubesar zevach todash lamav biyom karbano yeyachel. When do you have to eat? How much time do you have to eat this karban? So the Torah says you have to eat it on that day. The day that you eat it, lo yanich mimenu ad boker, you may not have any of it left till the morning. Which means if you show up on a Wednesday morning and you bring your karban, so you have that day of Wednesday and that following night, Wednesday night, but by Thursday morning sunrise, everything has to be completed. Now, most karban shlamim, and most of the other types of peace offerings that the Jew himself is allowed to eat, you have the day you bring it, that night, and the following day. So that, let's say you wanted to bring a voluntary offering, and you show up on a Wednesday morning, so you bring your karban, so you have fresh meat Wednesday lunch, fresh meat steak for dinner Wednesday night, and Thursday morning breakfast and lunch, you have fresh meat all the way till the end of the day Thursday. So you have really all day Wednesday night, all day Thursday to finish off all of the karban until it becomes forbidden, because that's the time limit. But if you bring a Thanksgiving offering of thanks, you have a smaller amount of time. You could only eat it the day you bring it and that night. You don't have the next day's lunch and early dinner. It must be completed if you bring it Wednesday afternoon. That's all you have. Wednesday night, by Thursday sunrise, everything has to be completed. Now, it's a shorter amount of time. Not only do you have a shorter amount of time to actually eat the meat, but as we just learned, you have a lot of bread that comes along with it. Besides what the Kohen gets, you have 36 loaves of bread. 27 of them, which are matzah, are non-chametz, 9 of which are chametz, but 36 loaves of bread, plus all this meat, and all we have is the rest of the day on Wednesday and Wednesday night, before it becomes forbidden to be eaten. How do you get rid of all that food? How do you get rid of all of that food in such a short time? The most amount of food out of any offering in the shortest amount of time. This has been very famously suggested by many. Why would it be that the Torah would tell us when you have the most amount of food, you have the least amount of time? How do you get rid of that? What's the answer to that? Very simple answer. No, you're all mute, so I can't hear you. But the very simple answer is you have to invite a lot of people to your party. It's the only way to get rid of a lot of food in a little bit of time. Either you invite some high school boys or you invite a lot of friends, because that's the only way to get that done. And so why is it that this particular korban has those criteria? This is the giving of thanks in which a Jew says, I thank you for the fact that I have my life. I took the time. I arrived here in Yerushalayim, I brought my karban, and I'm going to let everybody know about it. So I'm going to have a big party to invite as many people as I can to make sure that I can get rid of all of this food. It can be eaten in the smallest amount of time that I have with the most amount of food that needs to be consumed in order to share the good word. One last point before we go on to the next thing, and that is Rashi's language, which I mentioned earlier, which is the language of the Gemara, that these four people whose lives were saved, and we've of course expanded that into anyone whose life was saved and under any other circumstances, the language is tsrichin lohodot, have to give thanks. Now the word tsrichin in Hebrew, tsarich, means like you have to, but it's not the normal word that's used when the sages want to tell us we have an obligation. When the sages want to teach us that we have an obligation to do something, there's a very specific word that they use all the time, and that word is chayavin. You are obligated to do something. So they should have used the language of, there are four people who are obligated to give thanks. And the sages are teaching us a very significant lesson in their language. We as human beings, as Jews particularly, look at things and we use different words to express when we have to do something. Sometimes we use the language that says, I'm obligated to do this. I have to do this. It's a burden upon me that I have to do. And if you pay attention to the way that we speak, we say that all the time. You know, like, I have to clean for Pesach. I have to go daven. I have to go take care of this. I have to do this. And it's we speak in a language that implies, I don't want to be doing this. There are lots of other things that I'd like to be doing. But what am I going to do? I have this obligation upon it. I got to take care of this. It's a burden upon me. Whatever the burden may be, whether it be Pesach, a Seder, a Shabbos, whatever it is, I have to. I have to. It's an obligation upon me. And the sages shy away from that language. They don't say, these four people are obligated to give thanks. These four people need to give thanks. It needs to come from within themselves. Something just happened. These are the four people. We're not imposing an obligation upon you. We are pointing out these four people should feel from within themselves, I need to go to the Beis HaMikdash. I have to give thanks. Not because there was an external obligation imposed upon me, but from internally bursting forward from my being, I feel that this is something that I need to do, that this is something that I need to take care of from myself. So they didn't use the language obligated, chayoven, as if we impose this upon you. We're just pointing out that these are the four people who need to feel that this is something that they need to do, and that is the korban todah. Take that thought, put it on the shelf for a moment. We're going to get back to it. This coming Shabbos is Shabbos HaGadol, which means as it has been identified as a Shabbos that leads into Pesach. It was the Shabbos when the Jews originally took their lamb and tied it to their posts, their bedposts, to get ready for the bringing of the Korban Pesach, which was in itself a great miracle, the sages point out, because the Egyptians were flabbergasted that the Jew would dare go and buy. Imagine it was like all of the Jews suddenly flooded the market to buy a lamb, which was the deity of the Egyptian. They're like, what are you doing? Like, well, we're going to slaughter this to our God. And the Egyptians weren't able to do anything. They weren't able to stop them. And it was a moment of freedom for the Jew to be able to say to his oppressor, this is what I'm doing for my God, and there's nothing you can do about it. That happened on Shabbos HaGadol and the Shabbos before, just like this year, which is a Wednesday night Pesach. That's the way that I believe, if we have it correct, that's when Yontif was. Original Pesach Mitzrayim was on a Wednesday night. I think that's right. The parallels between the original Pesach Mitzrayim and this year's Pesach that we're going through can continue to show up in many different ways. It should be a harbinger of good things and redemption for the Jewish people. But that was Shabbos HaGadol on the 10th of Nisan. I need to just double check that. I think that's correct, right? This year, Shabbos is going to be the 10th of Nisan. Yeah, exactly the way that it was in Pesach Mitzrayim. So this year the Haftorah, if we were in shul and we leaned in a minyan, we would not read the normal Haftorah of Parshas Tzav. There's a special Haftorah for Shabbos HaGadol. But if it were a regular, if Parshas Tzav did not fall out on Shabbos HaGadol, it has a designated Haftorah. I want to just share with you, even though we would not have read this Haftorah, even if we were in shul because of Shabbos HaGadol, but there's a very significant opening of this particular Haftorah. It's from Sefer Yirmiyahu. If you happen to have a stone chumash in front of you, you can open up to page 1167. If not, it's fine. I'll just read a few verses and translate. But if you do have the stone chumash, 1167, the Haftorah for Parshas Tzav opens up as follows from the prophet Jeremiah, Sefer Yirmiyahu. Ko amar Hashem Tzvakos Elokei Yisrael. Hashem has a message for the Navi Yirmiyahu to convey to the Jewish people. And it's a message about the Karban. It's what we've just been learning. Today we just learned a little bit about the Karban Todah. We've already learned about the Karban Ola and various other offerings last week. This week, the whole Parsha has to do with Karbanos and much of Sefer Vayikra as a whole. And here's the message that Hashem tells to Yirmiyahu that we read on a regular Shabbos that we read Parshas Tzav. So meaning the sages told us this is what you should be reading about on a Shabbos when you're normally reading about Karbanos. So when that's what's going through your mind that you're reading about Karbanos, just parenthetically, let me take just a step back. Why do we read a Haftorah at all? Where did that come from? So that came from the sages enacted that we should read a Haftorah from the Navi during a time in Jewish history when the ruling nations would not allow Jews to gather in shuls and lane from the Torah. This is not the first time shuls have been. We've had many, many difficulties throughout Jewish history. So there was a period of time where Jews were not allowed to publicly gather and learn Torah publicly. But whatever the governing bodies were, they only prohibited the reading of the actual Torah. They felt they correctly so that has a greater significance. So the sages enacted during that period that we should read from the Navi, which they were allowed to do, and they always chose something that was related to the Torah reading that it would keep alive what should have been done. So what during that limited time frame where Jews were not allowed to publicly read from the Torah, they would instead read from the Navi. And the Navi selection always had to do with whatever the parsha was about. And then once that edict was lifted and we were allowed to, again, read from the Torah, the sages enacted, you know what? We like it. Let's keep it. When else would people go out and have a drink during davening if we don't keep the Haftorah? No, that's not what they said at all. In fact, you should stay. The words of the prophet were as relevant today as they were back then. And you should be there to be able to hear and read from the Navi. So they kept the Haftorah, even though we now could go back and do what was originally enacted, which was reading from the Torah itself. We kept the Haftorah. So what was the Haftorah chosen for Parshas Tzav, which we just learned a little bit about the Karban Todah, which is filled with the rest of the Parsha, which we didn't do about Karbanos? The message that Yirmiyahu says as follows. Olo Sechem, Kilo, Kilo Dibartius Avosechem. I have not, or I did not, speak with your father, your forefathers. Velotzi visim b'yom hotzi osam yeretz Mitzrayim, and I did not command them from the day I took them out of the land of Egypt. Al divrei ola v'zavach. I did not command them regarding an ola offering, regarding a peace offering. That's not what I commanded them about. Ki im es hadavar hazet tivisi osam lemor. This is what I commanded them about. Not about the offerings, not about the shlamim, not about the ola. This is what I commanded them. Shim'u bikoli v'hayisi lachem le'lokim. Listen to my voice. Hear, heed my voice, that I might be a God to you, v'atem tiyuli la'am, and you can be a nation to me. V'halachtem b'chol haderech asher atzaveschem, and you will follow all of the paths that I have commanded for you. Lema'an yitav lachem, so that it will go well for you. That's what I commanded your fathers coming out of Egypt. Not about the offerings, I command them to follow in my way. And then the Navi continues, V'lo shamu, but they didn't listen, they didn't follow, and therefore from the day they left Egypt until today, and therefore I've had to send all of my prophets to them to warn them, they still refuse to listen, and terrible things are going to be exiled, and so on and so forth, a story of which unfortunately we know. Question is asked, what exactly does the prophet mean when he says, I didn't command them about offerings, I didn't command them about peace offerings and elevation offerings, I command them to follow. Maybe you missed Parshas Tzav, maybe you missed Parshas Vayikra, you did command us and all that. Don't tell me the words, I didn't command you about those things. Of course, we have a whole Parsha that describes that this is what we were going to do. Why does Hashem use such a language? Of lo tzivisim avoseichem biyom motzi al adivrei ola v'zavach. I didn't speak to them about ola offerings and pifa offerings. Sure you did. So many commentators discuss why that language is specifically used. And I just want to share with you one approach, a beautiful approach from Rav Zalman Sorotskin, who wrote a sefer called Aznayim LaTorah. And he understands it as follows with the following parable. And I apologize to any doctors or spouses of doctors out there. This is just a parable. But he expresses it as follows. How would we look at a doctor? Let's take either a heart surgeon or even a doctors focused on cancer treatments, Rachmana Litzlan, and they spend years training to be able to perform what they do, life-saving work. So Rav Zalman Sorotzkin points out, they might not ever be consciously aware of this, but there's an intrinsic, almost contradiction in the lives they're leading, in which their entire essence of their professional lives are to heal people, to cure people. And all of their training and their livelihood depends on it. And that means, by definition, their livelihood depends on someone getting sick. So that, heaven forbid, they would never want anyone to get sick. They would never ask for that. They would never, heaven forbid, never. But they're in a position in which their whole livelihood, their whole training, everything that they've done in their life is actually dependent on something bad happening to someone else, at which point they can then do what they're doing. And even the most altruistic of doctors, it's a bizarre dynamic in which if all of a sudden you would snap their fingers, then they would, I'm sure, be very happy, of course, but they'd have to find something else because everything they're doing was dependent on this reality. Now, we live in a reality where that's around us all the time, so we need heart surgeons and we need doctors of all sorts to be able to heal. So he says, but it's an interesting dynamic that it depends on something bad happening to someone else. And Reb Sorotzkin says as follows, you might have thought mistakenly that God set up a system of offerings that's similar, in which he's waiting or needing a Jew to do something wrong, to inadvertently make a mistake, and he gave us all of these laws that you should come to the Beis HaMikdash and offer me whatever your animals are to atone for the mistakes that you made, and I'm sitting here waiting for you to make an error so that you'll come and bring a karban. He says that would be a terrible mistake. It's not at all set up in a way in which Hashem is saying, I'm sitting here waiting and desiring you to make a mistake. And his language is as follows. Yirmiyahu is coming to refute such a way of thinking. Terrible thing. He says, no, I did not speak to your forefathers nor command them regarding burnt offerings or sacrifices. That's not what I commanded them. I don't want you to rebel against my word, to neglect a positive commandment, or to need to bring a offering for because of a transgression. I don't want you to become spiritually ill and then come to me to be cured. That's not what I want. I want to be able to be, so to speak, your spiritual doctor, even if you do not fall ill. And that's why the language, when we introduce the entire concept of the offerings, is Adam ki yakriv mikem korban laHashem. If a person will come and offer mikem, from you, an offering to Hashem. And many of the commentators point out, the simple translation is when you want to bring from your stuff. But really the language implies when a person is ready to bring himself. When a person is ready to come and say, this, I stand before you and offer myself and everything that I can do, that's why Hashem wants us to come before us. Meaning, he did command us about sacrifices, but they're not an end in of themselves. They're the means with which to improve our relationship. And Hashem is begging the prophet, tell the people, I don't want your offerings for atonement. That's a terrible reason to have to come. I want you to be able to come simply to develop the relationship. That's why I want you to come. If the relationship needs a repair, this is a great way to do it. But I want you to be able to come without that. What's the prime way the prime way to develop that relationship without it being a form of an atonement, without it being a form of having something in Dinra, that is the korban that we read about earlier, the korban toda, the offering of thanks. The offering that says, from within myself, I feel the need to come and give thanks. There are other times I have to come, but that's not the ideal situation. Hashem says, all I want is that tishma b'koli, listen to my word, follow in my ways. Happens to be that if there was an error, which the relationship needs to be amended, then we have a mechanism to do so. But there's also a specific type of offering, which is the most ideal type of offering, which is not a response to something that we did wrong. It's a response to the recognition that we have internally of, I want to be closer, I want to be able to develop this relationship. And that is the relationship specifically of the Korban Toda, which is why, as is pointed out, the Medrash says, there'll be a time in the future, the Medrash says, it's unclear exactly which point of the future time we're referring to over here, Kol hakarbonos asidin libatel. All offerings will be nullified. Chutz, with one exception, the korban toda. The peacegiving, the thanksgiving offering will always be there. Now, different commentators talk about exactly what does it mean that they'll be nullified. We will have offerings, we won't have offerings. Unclear what will happen. It's possible that we won't have inadvertent offerings. Nobody will do anything wrong by accident. Who knows? But what will remain for sure, the sages tell us, without question, is the sense that a Jew will have on their own to pick up from wherever they live and say, kids, we're making a trip. We're headed to Yerushalayim. Bring your friends, because I got a lot of bread, I got a lot of meat, and a little bit of time to consume it. I want to make a feast to express my thanks, to express the gratitude that I have. And I'm not responding to something that I did wrong. I just want to say thank you. And in so many ways, in our own lives, when we use our own relationships as a model, we just see the value in which everybody knows. I mean, the jokes are out there. You know, everybody knows that when, you know, the classic joke, whether it's on a TV sitcom, you know, husband comes home and says to his wife, I want to take you out for dinner. And her response is, what'd you do wrong? It's the classic line of like, oh, well, obviously, if you're doing this, you know, you need something, or you're making up for something. That's the classic joke. There's a reason why it's a classic joke, because that's how we live our lives. We only think to do something special to make up. That's the type of offering. That's a korban chatzis. It's a sin offering. It's an atonement. You did something wrong. You come to the Yerushalayim to make up for it. Hashem says, I don't want those. I gave you that so that when you need it, it's there. But you know what I really want? I want you to come just because. I want you to come just to say thank you. I want you to come and share it with your friends and family just because. That will never be abolished. That will always remain. That sense of an internal recognition of a Jew who just wants to have a relationship and says, I'm coming to say hi. Come, let's go out for dinner. What'd you do? Nothing. I just want to spend time with you. I'm not going to ask anything. I didn't do anything wrong. I just like being with you. That is the most valuable invitation. And it's so funny that we even need to say it, that what always goes through our mind is, oh, what are they getting? What are they asking? What do they need? What did they do? Because that's a human reality, and it's a human reality with our relationship with Hashem as well. And Hashem is telling the prophet, tell the people, I know it's there. It shouldn't be that when I see them in the Beis Hamikdash, it's like, ah, Shlomo is here again. I wonder what he did wrong this time that he's bringing me this. No, come because you want to say hi. Come because you want to say thanks. That will always be there. That will never be abolished. It will always be a part, because that is the most significant, important element of our relationship with Hashem. It's what we use to develop our relationship with our friends, with our families. To do now, as we've been saying many times, call your friends, call the people who normally you sit next to in shul, who normally you would see sitting in shul, and just say, I miss you. I just wanted to say hello, wish you a good Shabbos, wish you a good Yontif.
That is the type of relationship, not because I'm asking anything, not because I need anything, not because I did anything wrong. I just want to say hello. I just want to say thanks. I leave you with that message. I wish you all a wonderful day. If you guys want to hang out in this room and speak with each other, share what you had for lunch and all other good things, you are welcome to do so. You could push the space bar to take yourselves off mute. My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. We will not have a class next Wednesday. It's Erev Pesach. I'm sure we will all have other important things to do. But we will meet up after Yontif. The next Wednesday will be Yontif again. So we'll meet up in a couple of weeks again. This new Zoom session. So even, I have a feeling, even when we get back together in person, and those of us who eat lunch together, will eat lunch together, well, I'll have a little computer in front of me. And those who wanted to log in from wherever they are, I will be able to continue joining us. So in any case, have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll leave it on for a few minutes. Those who want to make any comments. And have a wonderful day, everyone.